So let's get started here. Last year, we focused mainly on this background question. What is the scope of the disagreement of Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek and Lav Shmei Hezek? In particular, we wanted to know the view that holds Lav Shmei Hezek. Does that view deny that there's a concept of Hezek Riyah altogether? Or does it simply hold that there's a more limited application to the principle of Hezek, to Hezek Riyah? Correct? And we were looking at the Gemara's cases of the Shiny Hacha, Shiny Hassam, Shiny Hacha, Shiny Bina, etc., etc., to try to pin down that debate. Right? So we saw, for example, the question of Shiny Bina. The Gemara said that Gina is an exception. That seemed to attempt to demonstrate that even the view Hezek Riyah Lav Shmei Hezek is going to concede that there's a need for a wall in the case of Bina. Now, the basis for that concession is disputed. That's really where we left off last week. Now, before I say a few comments about that, obviously looming in the background is a secondary question here, more of a fundamental question than the one about the scope of the debate of Hezek Riyah, and that is, like, what is Hezek Riyah? Right, that's obviously the most interesting question in the Sugya. What is Hezek Riyah and why does Halacha care about it? Like, what's the underlying value at issue in Hezek Riyah? We're going to address that issue head on a little bit later, probably next week, but it's good to start being sensitive to that as we look at the evidence in this discussion. Okay? So, briefly on the Gina issue. So the Gemara said, isn't it obvious that Hezek Riyah is Shmei Hezek? That was Gemara in Beis and Beis. After all, you have to have a wall in the case of Gina. The Gemara said Gina is shiny because this Memer of Rav, Asal Adam Lamed Besada Chavera B'Shal Shiyamedes B'Kamo Seha. Now, the underlying idea of the Memer of Rav seems to be that a person, when they have good fortune, so their field is in its abundance, the grain is fully ripe, it's bad karma, or it'll create bad fortune if you kind of stand there and get jealous of your friend's success, right? In German, there's a good term, Schadenfreude. You ever come across that term, right? That's like when you're happy with your friend's failures. So this is like an inverse phenomenon, right? So it's like if you're jealous of his success, the Gemara thinks that's going to adversely affect him. Now, you could see Rashi here said, Lo yazikenu bayin ra. You could see Rabbeinu Gershom said, Mishum demistaklin biginaso machnisen bo ayin hara. So the Gemara itself didn't say anything about ayin hara, but definitely the Chachmei Ashkenaz insert that as their interpretation. Now, it seems to me, just from surveying the Ayin Hara discussion, anybody go down this rabbit hole to try to get a sense of what exactly Ayin Hara is? Hari, you
mind? Just the course.
Okay, the ones that I added, yeah. So I think those add some color as to what Hezek Riyah, what Ayin Hara itself is. So just to give you an example, you have the Mishnah and Avos in two places in Perek Beis. Talks about Ayin Ra or Ayin Hara, maybe two distinct phenomenon. But just very quickly, in Bay's test, the Mishnah says, Ezu Derech Ra Sheis Rachik Menho Adam. Rabbi Elazar says Ayin Ra. So Ayin Ra is a bad thing. Similarly, Rabbi Yeshua and Bay's Yid Aleph, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ayin Hara, Yitzar Hara, Vesina Sabrios, Motzina Sa Adam in Olam. So Ayin Hara is mentioned briefly as negative. And the Rishonim here seem to have two different interpretations as to what Ayin Hara is in that case. Zachary, you want to tell us?
Yeah, so it seems to be everyone raises the phenomenon of either jealousy of the success or kind of frustration with your own failure. So Mishaino Sameach Achelko, as Ben Yonah says. And he points to two potential causes of harm through this. Number one, which I think he emphasizes more, is the harm to the person himself through generating these feelings within him.
Right? And that's obviously, that makes a lot of sense, right? The idea is if you sit there and you're just jealous and you stew over your friend's success, so it's unhealthy, right? Unless maybe that, like, pushes you to excel.
But otherwise, it's just bad to be jealous of somebody else's achievements, right? So that's kind of psychological advice that Rabbeinu Yonah gives you. Hu gorem ra la'atzmo. Only bad comes from that.
Right. But okay? It also causes harm to his fellow, as the scientists say, because there's some sort of avir which comes from these sorts of thoughts, and it burns his other guy's possessions.
That you look at adversely, right? So then the Rishonim get a little metaphysical here, and they want to say, oh, when you cast that jealous eye at your neighbor's stuff, you actually cause some metaphysical harm to it, or even physical harm, in their view. Right, Zecharia?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, for our purposes, I don't think it matters which one of these approaches you take, whether you go for some psychological interpretation or for this metaphysical interpretation. Like, take the Meiri's formulation, which I think is beautifully neutral. So the Meiri Navo says, look, ayin hara, kol she'eino ra l'acherim, ad she'gorem lehem takala. It means, like, look, you have you kind of have this negative way of looking at your friend's stuff to the extent that you cause them an adverse result. So whether that means that ultimately you steal from them, whether that means that you go around just, like, saying bad things about the person because you're jealous of them, right? Or you generate gossip that causes some harm to the person. So those are all various ways of making sense of ayin hara. Everybody familiar with this phenomenon, right? You see your friend doing really well, and then you just kind of, like, want to, like, put him back somehow. No, only I feel that way sometimes? No. No? Does that resonate with you guys, like, that phenomenon? So I think that's what the Meiri is saying here. That's what an ayin hara is, right? So Chazal, in the iteration in the Gemara Bava Basra, are saying, look, don't sit there reviewing your friend's portfolio and just, like, stewing over his success. Only bad will come of that. And then Chazal go further and they say, you know what? Actually, there's an obligation to build a fence to block you from becoming jealous in this way. Okay. So, you know, you can think of a contemporary example. The Gemara talks about Agina, but you could see somebody builds a nice house. Somebody has a nice car parked in their driveway, right? The Gemara is saying, look, it's just a really bad thing to leave your Maserati parked in the front yard, put it in the garage, right? To the extent that now it could create a chiv of building garages so that there doesn't create this ayin hara writ large. Yeah?
There's no actual damage, though.
What?
There's no actual damage, though.
In that case?
According to this.
Well, the Meiri says, acha gorim lahem takala, right? So the idea is, like, you'll start now talking badly about that guy, right? Like, oh, his money didn't come honestly to him, right? Or something. And then that just, like, could create economic fallout. People aren't going to want to do business with him. Or ultimately, you'll take liberties with his money because you think he has so much of it. Whatever it may be. Make sense?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's more of a preventative measure than, like, there's actually something, right? It's kind of like what Kobe did the other day. Like, there's no guarantee that that's actually going to happen.
Correct. Correct. It's really just like
more
exactly, right? We'll see the Rambam's formulation in a second, but I think that's, like, the easiest way of making sense of ayin hara without having to go the metaphysical route that Rabbeinu Yonah went about the eyes causing, like, the produce to burn up, right? Whenever my mother-in-law comes over, she says, "Don't leave your bike in the sunroom because you're just, like, asking someone to steal it." I don't know. Maybe that's, like, a similar phenomenon. Okay, so that Meiri's formulation is really nice. You could see the Tashbetz in his commentary in Avos also has a few different ways of making sense of ayin hara. Zecharia, did you see the mugging up the Tashbetz here?
Yeah.
Okay, so just tell us the highlights.
Rambam,
what's that? Yeah.
So I quote the Rambam, which says that pretty much is mostly kind of like psychological, that once someone is so filled with jealousy and desire to chase after money, he's going to end up putting himself in a dangerous situation. So actually, ayin hara is primarily dangerous for the beholder.
Yeah. So notice, by the way, I think that's perfect. So did everybody understand what Zecharia said? Right. So the ayin hara issue adversely affects the person who's jealous, not the person who has the... So the idea is, like, if I leave my really nice bike in the sunroom, so my poor neighbor is going to be like, oh, I really got to buy myself a fancy bike. And he's going to be selling his kidney to get himself a fancy bike. And that's really bad for him, right? Because he's better off with his kidney, but his jealousy over my bike caused him to do something really stupid. So I think that's still consistent with the Gemara. The Gemara is saying, look, there's a chiyuv to put up a wall so that people don't impose self-harm. Right? I think that's even a possible way of reading the Gemara. Because the Gemara raises it in the context of Hezekiah, we're kind of trained to think that the wall is there to benefit the owner of the property, not the peerer. But I think if you go with this formulation, you actually can read the Gemara. Also, la'adam lamod v'sadeh chaver b'shash yemedes v'komaseha to save the peeper, the peerer, not the baal hakarka. Okay?
I think Rami says explicitly in Shuba.
What?
I think Rambam
yeah, Midas Chasidus. Yes, I think that's correct. Right? So Rambam's Lashitasa then. Right? We'll see the Rambam in Tshuva seems to read our Gemara as being Midas Chasidus, arguably for the looker, not for the Balakarka. And then you can see here the Rambam has... I think this is the Taj Beitz himself objecting. So it's Zapir Shinonira.
Right, so he says, he
throws
the book at the Rambam and says, number one, they use two different terms, and ayin hara, the definite article, capital E, of evil eye, comes up all the time and seems to be actually causing harm to the person being seen, to the all over the place.
That's right. So if you're ayin haros chaver bas nechasav derech kina visina, v'hu mazik osav v'nechasav, right? It just kind of leads you to want to take your friend's property, right? So that's going to be mazik him. In some way. So the neighbors could actually steal my bike when he has to wake up every morning and see it parked in my driveway. Okay. And then the Tashbis himself gets a little metaphysical, but we don't have to, you know, that's the same as Rabbeinu Yonah. He says, you know, maybe there are sparks that come out of your eyes. So that's like the metaphysical view of Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay, so I'll call upon him. The point is that there are a few ways to interpret Ayin Hara or Ayin Ra. Just to sketch three of them again. One is this metaphysical view that when you look at his stuff, you're causing it, and you're harming it in some way through looking. Right? So it's like shining a laser. The laser causes a little surface damage to the stuff. The other way is that it's bad for you to look at his stuff because it's going to make you jealous and cause you to do stupid things or things that are self-harming. And the third view is that it's bad for him because it's gonna lead you to action that's going to actually steal his property or harm his property out of jealousy. Good? Okay. Now, that's just literally what does ayin hara mean, and therefore, by extension, what is the reason for asur l'adam lamod b'sadeh chaver b'shal shiyomedes b'kol maseha, and by further extension, the Gemara's suggestion by Gina. Right, you see your friend's really nice garden, that's going to generate those problems. What's an open question, and this is what we discussed last time, is whether that itself is a concern of Hezekiah or something normatively and conceptually distinct from Hezekiah. Okay? So let me just summarize that very quickly. That's Machlokas Rishonim. Right? So is the thing of Ayin Hara, which we just gave three possibilities of what it means, Is that itself a subset of Hezekiah concerns or something totally different from Hezekiah? And this begins to bear on our question that we're going to take up downstream. Well, what is Hezekiah, right? What's the underlying halachic value in Hezekiah? So I added to the Makoro sheet Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom here on Beis Amid Beis is very clear that what? Shiny Gina, how does he read Shiny Gina? I'm so excited I put this on the WhatsApp group. Did anybody see this when I posted it? Yeah. That's the part where you guys say like, whoa, awesome Makar, that was great. But everyone was silent. Nobody was excited like I was. Okay, so what's the significance of Rabbeinu Gershom?
He just makes it very clear that he thinks it's something totally different than Hezekiah.
Yeah. He's just on the books explicitly as saying that Gina, the requirement for a wall there, you know, the Ayin Hara stuff, is lav mishum de taima de Hezekiah, right? It's a consideration completely distinct from Hezek Rhea. So that already limits the kinds of considerations that go into Hezek Rhea considerations, right? Ayin Hara is distinct from it. Okay? The Meiri disagrees. So what was nice about the Meiri is that he was pretty explicit. He said, look, there's a machlokes between me and the Rambam about what type of wall is required to be built for Ravina. Is it a 10-tefachim wall or a Dalet Amos wall? And the Meiri even tells us that this legal dispute turns on whether you think Gina, at the end of the day, is a Hezek Rhea problem or a distinct problem of Ayin Hara. The Meiri says, I think it's Hezek Rhea. So you can see he says, Gina requires a Geder. V'davar zeh achu nemar mishum Hezek Rhea. So the Meiri is very clear about that and therefore requires Dalet Amos. He says, Far b'yarnu sh'agina yesh ba Hezek Rhea. Now I take that to mean, I think this is obvious, that for the Meiri, the Ayin Hara argument of the Gemara, also adam lama b'sana chaver b'shashi ametis b'komaseh, is itself a type of Hezek Rhea. I think that's the Meiri's view. He says, if you read the Gemara from the Sugya, when it says Gina Shiny, what follows from Gina Shiny? This is the crucial phrase. Ned?
Gina has a lower threshold. There's more Hezek Rhea going on in the Gina case.
If anything, Gina has more Hezek Rhea going on than Chaser. Because that's the shot of the Gemara, right? Gemara says Gina Shiny, meaning, okay, maybe we're not sure if there's Hezek Rhea by Chaser, but for sure there's Hezek Rhea by Gina. That's the exact opposite of Rina Gershom's way of reading the Gemara. Right? Shemira Shagina Geshba Hezek Rhea Ach Biyoser Na Chaseros. So that's the Meiri's clear view, diametrically opposed to the Rabbeinu Gershom. If you had a chance to see the exchange between the Rambam and the Chachme Luniel in the Tshuvas Rambam, which I added. What's that?
Isn't that applies to the Havamina
coming to reject that? What? No. This is not the Havamina. He's saying the Rambam's view problematically is that there's no Hezek Rhea in Agina. You might think the Rambam's view is indefensible because it's against the straightforward reading of the Gemara. Well, you know, there's a way to make sense of the Rambam's view, etc., 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 and that's where he says this stuff.
So you're saying that he reads that Shinira Shagini Shvatsubir Afdias Menachatseros, that's actually true in the conclusion, and the Gemara is just giving either decoys or.
Correct.
Other children read it differently.
Correct. He says, I hold Hezek Rhea Yeshba, that Gina has Hezek Rhea, the Rambam doesn't. Shema ata matmiya l'divrehem. You might think the Rambam just like had a bad day when he learned this sugya, because doesn't the sugya imply that there's more Hezek Rhea and Gina? It's like, well, there's a way to make sense. Mikol makom yesh lefareshba, right? There's like a way to explain the Rambam's view. And then the Meiri says, well, like, you know, even in our view, you could read the Gemara that way, if imtirtze, right? But it doesn't sound like the Meiri's preferred reading. Now, this same tension about reading that Gina line is at the heart of the dispute between the Rambam and the Chachmei Luniel. Chachmei Luniel and the Tshuvas Rambam Simon Shin Sadi Hei. You know, they say, Mr. Rambam, we saw your work. You write that a Gina only requires 10 tefachim of a wall. But that's against the Gemara. Look at this. Let's take a volunteer to read that. Shmuel, you want to read this line?
The
Hezek Rhea. Yeah, meaning,
if you read the first part of Bava Basra, you get the sense that
it is a Hezek.
Not just that it's a Hezek.
But that it is a Chaser.
Yeah, say that whole sentence. Just Pshita Lan Begina, the Hezek Re'e Shriya Shmei Hezek Mi Bechaser. Like a comparative judgment here. Right. That what?
That, unlike what we were saying previously, essentially that Gina and Chaser are on with each other, that they're more related than we had previously thought.
Well, what do you mean more related? In terms of Hezek Rhea, so Pshitalan, it's more obvious that there's Hezek Rhea in a Gina than in the case of Chaser. So that's like the Meiri's view, correct? Meaning, also the Adam, if they're saying, read the first Bhagavad Gita, the sense you get is that the Gemara is clear that there, it's obvious there's Hezekiah and Nagina, presumably because of also Adam Lama and Besada Chavir Bishachi and Menesukamasao. We're Masukbuk about Hezekiah and Achatzah. So this is again against Rabbeinu Gershom, like the Meiri, that this Ayin Hara consideration is itself a Hezekiah consideration. Okay, good.
This opinion is the Rambam, or it's the
Chachmei Eloniel ripping on the Rambam.
Okay.
Right, they say the Imkain, and if that's the case, why don't you, Mr. Rambam, require four Amos for Regina? The four Amos wall, if you require four Amos for a Chatzar. Right, Yorenu, Morenu, Goenenu, Kitzmeim, Anachnu, Litshuvaso, Kaayo, Saragal, Figemai. Right, so. And then the Rambam gets a little prickly when he responds. Right? He's like, well, Zos Hashela lo haisa la noshim gedolim kamochem lishol osa. So you guys should know better than to ask such a question. And look at what he says is interesting because of what Zechariah said earlier. When the Gemara says, V'chilo shani lechu, says, don't you guys recognize that there's a world of a difference bein hezek re'ia, shehu hezek gadol, right? Vadai sheyir adam chaver be'eshu omed v'yoshev v'oset tzrachav. So there's a clear difference between this species, which the Rambam just explained, Shayir Adam Chaver Beishu Ome Beyoshev Oset Srachav, and Hezek Ria of Eina Bisha. Sheelu Dvarim Chasidosem Shlo Yayim Babayin Ra. So what's the Rambam differentiating here? He's drawing a very nice conceptual distinction, right? Between the moral thing of Ra, Shlo Yamin Osadet Haveiro, and Hezek Ria. He used the phrase for both of them, but the concept of Hezekiah of this thing. And in particular, how does the Rambam distinguish between them? What's the difference between the Ayin Ra stuff and the Hezekiah stuff? Rami? Well, Mutas Chasidus, but that's a way of saying that the moral valence of one is just piety. The moral valence of the other is like an actionable tort. Right, so I'm saying, first of all, they're incomparable in terms of their legal enforceability and like the type of wrongdoing. Fine. But in substance, how does the Rambam characterize the thing that is just a moral, an issue of moral piety, and the thing that's like a tort, like a violation of someone's right? Yeah.
He thinks the thing that's violating someone's right is more the privacy side that we were talking about. He's just trying to do his own thing, and you're like looking around.
Yeah, exactly. Notice it's the fact that you're looking at him while he's standing and sitting and doing his stuff, right? Like you're tracking him. You're looking at him. That's very different than just looking at his property.
So there's an important distinction there that Rambam thinks the interesting discussion of Hezekiah in the first paragraph of Basra is about looking at your friend while he's doing stuff. The Eishehu Omeh Yoshev Oset Zraka. People should have a space of privacy where they're not being tracked by somebody else's peering eyes. That's different from this notion of Ayin Hara, which is that you shouldn't cause your friend a loss, maybe, that you shouldn't get jealous and do stupid things when you see your friend successful. That's just me discussing. Okay?
So the Rambam is on the books as thinking that Ayin Hara is very different from Hezekiah. He also gives us a little bit of a description of what he thinks Hezekiah is. And the Chachmei Eloniel, like the Meiri, are on the books as saying, no, Ayin Hara is itself the issue at bar in the Hezekiah discussion on that base. Okay? Everybody see that? Okay, so let's take some hands. So we'll take Ned, Josh, and then Zacharia.
Maybe the Rambam is still within that difference of between different levels of hezekriah. He doesn't really call both of them hezekriah.
He does. So your idea is that he uses this phrase, hezekriah?
Yeah, I can see how you can read that as just a hezek that emerges from...
Yeah, same. Yeah.
But
this is like a pet peeve of mine that I think the Gemara, Rishonim, some Rishonim are very sensitive to this. They have to distinguish between the semantic meaning and the conceptual meaning. So the idea is that, like, what do these words mean? Right? So the word means, like, you know, damage to sight. That's like the semantic meaning. But the conceptual meaning here, my view, in this case, is that this hezekriah means, like, something very, it's conceptually very different from this hezekriah, right? So, like, here he's using it in like the concept, like the halachic sense. Right? Hezekiah, Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek is about this. Here the Rambam, unfortunately, is slipping into like the semantic meaning. We shouldn't, if I was like, I don't know. He shouldn't have done that. If I was the Rambam's editor, I would have said, like, Rambam, you can't use the same phrase.
I'm very confused. It sounds like
what?
To shoot the Rambam.
So I was going to say that maybe it's the Shin Rama, but he's writing the Chachmei O'Neill, so I doubt he's writing Arabic. Most of the Rama's Jews aren't Arabic. But here's writing to, you know, people in France. So, right. So he shouldn't have used the word Hezekriah here. And I think this is like, Uvein Hezekriah Sheyira, like, you know, it's like one phrase. He's not talking about the halachic concept. Right? I think the Meiri, the Romi's Meiri stuff also, like the Hezekriah Levad stuff also, I think, has like a trading on like when you're talking about Hezekriah as the halachic concept and when you're talking about being mazik somebody through looking. Okay? But that's a good point. But I think in the Rambam it's very clear that they're conceptually unrelated. That's my view here. Good. So then we had Josh and then Zachariah.
Yeah. So the way that I'm looking at this last line now is with the Milos Nasidus. Kind of makes it seem like it's not a real hezek, and you shouldn't take it so seriously. But Rambam still is requiring you to put up 10 tefachim. So, is that just another kind of point, like a line where he's saying, "Don't take it that seriously," but it's still requiring.
Right.
Some,
I think.
Some kind of law.
Well, I think the Rambam would say that this is, you know, some laws flow from torts, nezikin, right? There's a legal duty, and some things flow from like hilchos deos almost. Right, like the Torah wants you to have good midos. This halacha, building a wall of 10 tefachim, is from the good midos halachos, not from the like what are my duty to my neighbors halachos. Right, so you know, it's like don't get angry. So have some little divider between you and your neighbor so that you don't get too jealous of his stuff. Right, so it's not hezekriah in this nezek sense. But you're right. There's some midos chasidus value. Right, so if that speaks to you, great. No, it's just a different type of importance. Right. Zacharia.
Yeah, just to make the point close to that I kind of referenced earlier, that this realm is Shikasa, that if you view that Ayin Hara has no real damaging capacity, that it's not gonna harm the produce, right? And really the only harm is actually coming from the ROAF, then the chasidus is that this guy is deliberately putting in some effort to be less showy for the moral benefit of his friends. That's the chasidus, because it doesn't really affect one way or the other, according to the Rambam. And the only motivation to do this is to protect other people. Most of the time, so high and hard is really to stop potential nesek coming to your property.
So, but the question is, who has the chiv to build a wall, right?
The chasidus is that you're helping him be less jealous.
Meaning?
By you building the wall.
So let's say they both have to participate in the wall, assuming right from the Mishnah. I think they both have to participate in the wall. So the Baal Hagina is helping the neighbor achieve chasidus by not being jealous of his own stuff.
Right. So another people emphasize that it's an usher activity to be partaking. You can't be. It's usher for the person to be standing over the commons, right?
Right. Correct. And the wall is to help you realize that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can imagine, like, you know, sometimes there are these communal policy things like no one should have more than like a guy playing piano, a keyboard at a wedding. These are like popular like 10 years ago. No, you know what I'm talking about? Like 10 years ago, this was like a thing, like older band, like no one should have a 6-person band at a wedding because people in the 5 towns are like taking a second mortgage on their house to be able to pay for a wedding that they can't afford. It was like a big thing. So there are like Torah web colcores all over the place about this. So the idea there was like similar, like everybody should conduct themselves, should like restrict their activities so that like the people who are kind of social pressured into acting a certain way won't feel that pressure. So you can see that's like a kind of minus chasidus. I think that's your point, Skaria, around, right? So if the Baal Hagina has to chip in for the wall, at least half of it, that's really to help out the neighbors not being in excess. Right? It's like minus chasidus for me to put my bike in the basement so that my neighbor doesn't get jealous over my... Okay. Good. Everybody with me? Good. So let's move on from Gina. We were doing so... Yesterday we already got to Daf Beis and the Beis. Today we're going to get to Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Flying. Okay, so Kosher Chatzos Shanafal we spoke about. That's the second exception. Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos here, whether Nafal Shiny is showing that this, in fact, is Hezek Riyah, you remember from last time. Rashi, putting aside Kobi's suggestion, Rashi seemed to say this is just a contractual issue. You agree to build a wall, the wall falls down, the duty to build the wall still exists. Nothing to do with Hezek Riyah. So there's no concession here, according to Rashi, that Manda Amar Lav Shmei Hezek concedes that it's Shmei Hezek in any case. Okay? Tosus disagrees. Tosus says Nafal Shiny, meaning, even if you hold that ex ante, L'chatchila, when you move into a chatzer, there's no right of privacy, so you're just subject to the peering eye of your neighbor. Once you're nisragel lekach, shehurgulu lasos davar hatzina, then you're entitled to that privacy. Okay? I don't want to think about this too deeply right now, but when we start thinking about chazakos in general, you know, you're used to conduct a certain way, you're established as doing certain things, that then turns into a legal right. It's kind of what's happening here, right? Once you get accustomed to behaving a certain way in your chatzer, that generates a legal right to act that way and to be shielded from your friends' peering glances. So this is almost like a very conservative, like conservatives like this type of argument in general, that like, the law is almost here to preserve the status quo, even though the status quo like slowly evolves. So the idea is that, look, the status quo is now that you're entitled to privacy, so the law just like recognizes de facto your right to privacy. Even though at an earlier point in time, you never had that right. Some people think of this in terms of the law not frustrating your legitimate expectations, like what you become. So the idea is that maybe Biden could tax the rich like down the line, but he can't like upset the expectation that people had already for this year that they were going to earn a certain amount of money. Or he can't like retroactively tinker with capital gain taxes because like people who own a certain amount of stock think that they are worth a certain amount of money, and when you tax it at a higher rate, suddenly they're worth less. So the question here is just like, just because people get used to doing something a certain way, why does that generate a legal right to continue to do it that certain way? Right? So just, I want to think of that in the back of our minds, that it's the halacha here just saying, well, once you're nisragel lekach, we're going to recognize it as legitimate. Even though if you weren't nisragel, it wouldn't be legitimate. So just keep that in the back of your minds. Okay, so now we move to the third case where the Gemara says that everyone's got to concede Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek. So what's our third case? Tashma, volunteer. Kobi, you want to?
Tashma, Kobi, no, they shall be that a chatzer, that you can force the other people of like, the group and force you to contribute pain to the Shah and the Dalit for the Khatzer. Shamina has a Grish Mehezek, and then Zigrigam Shani. The Zigrigam is different.
Okay, so that was all very quick, but very good. So the case here of Kofanoso Livnos Beishar Vidal, so the Mishnah Dav Zayin, this is like one of my favorite Mishnayos, it's the public goods Mishnah, right? It's, is there a right to force people to pay up, well, how do you force people to pay their due? It's actually not clear what the conceptual basis for this din is, right? It just says, if you all live in a condo, everyone's got to pay for repairs, or everyone's got to pay for the security downstairs. What the legal right is that there's like a presumed contractual agreement? Is it that if you're receiving benefits, you got to pay for the benefits? That's something we'll look into when we get to the Mishnah on Daf Zayin. You know, this is like the question of, you know, how can the government force us to pay our due for the police department or something? But the Mishnah takes it for granted that you can. So, in particular, you could force people to pay for a beishar deles for a chatzer. So let's just say it's like a condo, you have a communal living space, all these houses share a chatzer, that's common property, everyone's got to pitch in for the security booth that protects the chatzer. Now, there's a bit of a side issue here, some of the Rishonim are not sure, how does the Gemara know that this is because of Hezekriya? Anybody see that Ramban weighing in on this? Right, the Mishnah just says that everyone's got to pitch in to pay for the Beis Shaar and the Delas. How do you infer from there Hezekriya Shmei Hezek? Yeah.
I mean, I think Ramban said because if you would have said that it was Shmira, then it wouldn't really make sense because why would it make a difference if it was right near the Rabbin and why wouldn't it just be a door? So
the Ramban gets into like the nitty gritty issues here. He's like, well, if it's Shmira, then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's view in that Mishnah doesn't really make so much sense, right? And if it's Shmira, then Ramban raises some other considerations. So it's got to be about Hezekriya. So take a look at the Ramban. He tries to explain this. So let's think of the fact pattern here. So what are the facts? Kobe, take us through the facts of the case. We actually have two Rashis here. Rashi and Daf Zayin, where the Mishnah is, and Rashi and Daf Beis. What does Rashi tell us?
So that's just in Daf Zayin. He says, Kobe,
yeah, you ever hear that? Like you have a watchman who's paid to make sure people don't look into the chatzer. Kind of like a strange job. Right? He's like, can't look. Like, no. Right. That's Rashi on Daf Zayin. So everyone in the chatzer is required to pay this shomer who stops people from looking in. Okay, that's Rashi and Daf Zayin. Rashi and Daf Beis, what does he say?
Rashi Daf Beis is like maybe more clear about what he's getting at. He says,
yeah, but notice he has different factual description of the case, right? So Beis Shaar here is not referring to the shaded tent where the officer sits screaming at people from peering in. Beis Shaar here refers to like a rounded gateway that blocks the door so that there's a way to get in that it still obstructs vision from the outside. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it seems like it's the same thing. Like, instead of having a shomer, stop people.
Same point. Right. I guess it just depends on the labor is cheaper than like the building materials. Okay. So Rashi says the point here is to stop the Rabbin from peering into the chatzer. So what halachic obligation does that generate?
That people pitch in to
a duty to build this wall / pay the shomer. Okay. So The Gemara says, oh, that shows you Hezek Riyash Shmei Hezek. And the Gemara's answer is Hezek Adrabim Shiny. So before we get to the Gemara's answer, what strikes you as novel about this case? Romy.
Why is it my neighbor's responsibility? Meaning, as opposed to the other case where the guy caused the damage to be forced, now you're forcing other people to protect you from someone else.
Yeah, exactly. So in the standard Chatzer cases, you have a nice symmetrical plaintiff-defendant relationship, right? So neighboring properties, I'm mazik you, you're mazik me, I have a duty to block the hezek, I have a duty to block my nezek onto you, you have a duty to block your nezek onto me. So there's a very symmetrical relationship, and that kind of explains why there are mutual duties between the two parties. Right, so I'm mazik you. I have a responsibility now to be misalik my nezek. Correct? So that case is very clean. This case, as Romy tells us, is actually quite different. Here, I, as a resident of the condo, have an obligation to you and the others to block the hezek riyah of the rabbit. It's not my hezek riyah. I have a duty to stop the third party's hezek riyah. So what do you make of that? How could the Gemara say that proves hezek riyah shmei hezek? Yeah,
well,
Ezra.
The only way, I didn't really see this, but the only way that I can really understand the Gemara is that Gemara may be understanding this in a different way. It's not that one partner is damaging the other. It's that there's a general obligation on all people who own the field that that they have to enable the privacy or protection as a RIA of all members, all people who also own the chatzer. And that we've just been looking at it in a case previously, in a case where there are two partners and it's a self-contained case, so they're the only, they can affect each other. It just looks like a classic mazik is a case. It's not.
Good. Try refining that for us a little bit. So, try to put it a little sharper or a little more concisely. What are you saying in essence? Does everybody see at least the general point so far that kind of Romy and Ezra are pointing out? This case is very different from the prior cases, right? But the prior case says that I have a duty not to crash into you, right? And in fact, I have an obligation to put brakes on my car to make sure that I don't crash into you. Right, and now we're saying, we're talking about something else. We're saying that we all have a duty to put up those metal poles. I don't know if they have them anymore, in front of or rocks in front of the building to make sure that terrorists can drive into REITs or something. Right, it's like a different type of thing, and then the Gemara just lumps them together as all hezek riyah shmei hezek or lav shmei hezek. So, Ezra, what are you saying? So I'm saying the first case is obvious, right? I'm prohibited from being a mazik. And in fact, part of my obligation in not being a mazik is to take the steps or put in the measures that will in fact block me from being mazik you. It's part of my obligation to not harm you. Here, that relationship doesn't exist at all, right? There's no mazik-nizak relationship. So what's the basis of the obligation to put up the beishar?
It's an obligation on you as an owner of a stake in the field, not you as a person in relation to other people.
Okay, that's true.
Let's
put it a little differently. I think that's a true description. Just put it in terms a little more different terms. Yeah.
Benji. I think that it's, when we say that it's Shmei Hezek, what it's saying is it's just a reasonable request. Meaning if one person within the chatzer says, I don't want to be looked at, whereas, other people might, not be, like, they don't care as much, or they might not be as important, that person can force them to pay up because it's a reasonable request. The same way if, like, the elevator were to break and he lives on the 18th floor, but, you know, the people on the first floor, the people on the 17th floor are, like, marathon runners, and they have no problem climbing the stairs.
Right.
They could still force them to pay for the repairs because it's a reasonable request.
Okay, good. I think that is along the lines, if I'm not mistaken, that Reb Nachum here is getting at. Give you a little bio. You see, Reb Nachum is really a mirror, but he's a Talmud Reb Baruch Ber and Reb Chanan.
Appreciate the biography.
Yeah, you appreciate that?
Yeah.
Yeah, just to give you a sense of who everyone is. So Reb Nachum here has a nice observation. Sometimes a little bit too much of a mirror, so he's just like a lot of like textual stuff, right? But here he's like a little briskerism that shines through. So you could see he says that, look, this can't be midine harchakas nezikin, right? Meaning, this can't be about my duty not to harm you, because I'm not the harmer in this case. It's the rabbin that are mazik. So. And he's like, if that's the case, what does it have to do with Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek or Lav Shmei Hezek? So he says, the whole point of the Gemara's analysis here is Lohochiach Shenezek Zeh Chashiv Kichisaron. Really, what the Gemara is trying to establish is that the effect of people looking at your conduct is an actionable, like, effect. Right, as remember your name?
Benji.
As Benji, okay. As Benji said, you know, this is like a value for the chatzer, and it's something that you got to chip in for. That's really what Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek is about. Now, let me just point out that the word nezek, or even like a legal concept of nezek, is really ambiguous between what? Between the what and the what? The wrongdoing of the tortfeasor and the loss of the victim. Like when you talk about nezek, right? So it's not clear where the real emphasis lies, right? Does when you think of nezek, is that captured by the wrongful action of the mazik? He violated a right or something, or he acted wrongly. Or when you think of nezek, are we thinking primarily about the loss of the nizak? Like, what did the victim lose? This is kind of like an open question in like theory of nezikin or theory of torts in general. And I think what Reb Nachum here is saying is that when we think at least of hezek riyah shmei hezek or lav shmei hezek, we're interested. This example shows that we're not really so much interested in the wrongdoing of the peeper, of the looker. Really what the Gemara is trying to do here is to show that there's a bona fide real loss, there's a chashiv kichisaron to the victim who suffers from the looking of the other party. So what I want to point out is that you have this general question about nezikin. We're not even armed with the tools to address that question here in the first part of Bava Basra. But Reb Nachum seems to be saying, in the subset of nezikin discussions of Hezek Riyah, when we look at those cases, it seems, at least from this case, that it's very much victim-focused, not tortfeasor-focused. Okay? Now, obviously, his proof is from the fact that you could force other members of the chatzer to remove this harm when you're not even, in a way that's totally independent of, we're not even trying to change the conduct of the mazikin, right, the rabbin. We're not saying the rabbin have to pay, we're saying the bnei chatzer have to help out each other by building this wall. Okay? So that might be right now, don't know. Okay, so that might be a Hezek Riyah point. So it might be about, we don't care about the role of the mazik,
we really care about the Niza in the, when it comes to Hezekria. Okay. Or am I pointing to something else? This is one possibility. I'm going to get to the second possibility in a second, but it looks like Zolti had a hand and then Zakaria.
Yeah, I mean, so we still, I mean, based on Benji's suggestion, though, we still don't know why is the debt of the Shifrin, like, what's the basis as to why the Shifrin still have to pay for the visa? That's still not clear.
Right.
So I guess, is it possible to say...
Well, that's an open question in general. As I mentioned, that's really a Dav Zayin question. When the Mishnah talks about forcing people to pay for these goods, right? What's the basis of that?
Right.
But that could be distinct from Hezekiah even, right? So like they're the... We'll look at that Gemara. It might be for any goods, like the Halakha just thinks, like, why do you have to pay taxes? Not because of Hezekiah, right? There's got to be something broader than Hezekiah reasons why you have to pay taxes. So we'll try to figure out what that is.
Okay.
But let me just say, like, it's, you know, even in Nezikin in general... There's like this caricature of the New Zealand system, which supposedly says that if you get into a car accident, you don't sue the person who crashed into you. There's like a public compensation fund, like where like the government just tax everybody a certain amount a year to compensate car victims, right? So it's like, just like stop holding the plaintiff, stop holding the defendant accountable. Like if it's not worth it, why litigate? Let the government just compensate you for it. Which is like this model, right? So it's like, don't go after the guy who's passing by and sue him for the Hezekiah. Here's just like a public way, or a semi-public way, where the B'nai HaChatzer solve the problem through their own funds.
But still targeting specific individuals in the public.
Yeah, like members of your Chatzer, right?
Right.
Right, so the answer is, because they're all going to benefit from this in some way. Well, we don't know. We don't know what the actual, right? Reason is.
Right?
100%. Right. That would be like one way of explaining the mission of Zion. Like, why is everybody to pitch in? Because they're benefiting. Or like, why do they have to pitch in? Because like, this is like an assumed agreement. Like, when you get involved, you're appointing the board to decide what, the board of the condo to decide what expenses you have. Right. So there are different ways to make it more precise. But like, so one, but one way is to say that like, oh, like Hezekiah is really Nizak focused. And when we say Hezekiah Shmei Hezek, it's in that sense that some right of his is being trampled on when he suffers Hezekiah. That's all Hezekiah Shmei Hezek is trying to show. It doesn't show you that the ro'eh violated a duty of his. That's the move. Okay? Everyone good with that? Okay. Good. It's important for other reasons, which we'll talk about in due course. But, Sahar, you have a hand on this? What? Okay. Josh?
So, in our case, of a regular klotzer, we're not considered, like, this element of Nizak is really not as substantial.
Oh, so in the Gemara's answer of Hezekiah the Rabbim Shiny?
Yeah. Meaning, Hezekiah, like, based on that answer, we're saying that, okay, Hezekiah the Rabbim, this is actually considered a pretty legitimate Nizak. Right, but that's based on the
mazik
now, all of a sudden.
Well, hold off on the Hezekiah Rabbim Shiny point for a second. Right now, what I'm trying to show, but right now, all this shows is that how does the Gemara's question of Rabbim even get off the ground? That doesn't seem to be Hezekiah in the classic case, because in the classic case, like in the cases prior to this, it's the mazik who has to build the wall to be Masalik, his nezek. In the Rabbim case, it's the Ko-B'nei HaChatzer, we have to pitch in to Misalik the Hezekiah of the Rabbim. So the Mazik's not accountable. Right? So what does that have to do with Hezekiah Shmei Hezek? So Rav Nachum's answer is, the question of Shmei Hezek is just about whether the Nizak suffers some sort of real loss through Hezekiah. Not about a Mazik's duty to forbear from Hezekiah. See that?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, in our case of Klotzer, you can say that the knees are suffering from a real loss, and we're still saying Lashmer
has. Okay, so I want to get to that point in a second. What's the Gemara's answer? What's the Gemara's distinction in its answer to this case when it says, oh, this case can't prove anything? See, this is to show why this case could prove something. Why is this even Hezekiah, right? So nothing's saying, on the face of this, it shouldn't be Hezekiah because the Mazik's not liable.
But then you're asking a different question, which is, what's the Gemara's maskana, right? Why is this?
Yeah, it's a little premature about it.
Yeah, so we're going to get to that in a second. I have some questions about the maskana also. Yeah. Good. There was another hand up.
I mean, I was going to ask something about the maskana.
Okay, so let's get to the maskana in 1 second. Okay. I think Mr. Zalman, it's a bit of a cryptic short passage here in the Ibn Azel, but he wants to address the same question that Rav Nachum is addressing, but with a different answer. Does anybody get a sense of what the Ibn Azel is saying? What's his answer to that same question? Sakarya?
I kind of read the way that Benji mentioned before, is in that we're just trying to map out. So they're shutsbim, they have certain obligations to each other, like, you know, you gotta take turns, take out the garbage, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just trying to find out what is the legitimate claim that might have been part of this original agreement, might have been part of what shutsbim are obligated to each other.
Right.
So I'm not saying that it's a loss per se, but that it's that this is, so to speak, Hezekriya is a zach.
Yeah, good. Good. So the Ibn Azel, I think, is really, the Ibn Azel we'll see later on, is like the Mara Deshmaita, one of the main chakiras in this discussion. But what he basically tries to do here is this case of Rab improves, Muchach Lahedja, that this rule of forcing the Bnei HaChatzer to build the security wall, Shehu Midine Hischaivos HaShutvos. This is really about what are the assumed or the implied, I would even say, voluntarily accepted obligations of Shutfin. Okay. What? His shutfin thing. Yeah. We could talk about that. I think that might pull shutfus into might pull it too wide, like it's too much of a stretch of the phrase shutfin. But yeah, like there's a notion of like a voluntary eschivus, something like that. Yeah. What the Ibn Azel here is doing is saying this is no longer in Mezek land, right? This case of Beishar Lechatzer is definitely not about suing a Mazik. Really, it's about what are the implied terms of the agreement of the members of the condo. Okay? So this is not about Mezek at all. This is, we'll just use the popular phrase that the Horonim use, based off the way the Rambam codifies stuff in Hilchos Shechinim. This is really about what do neighbors, what do partners, people trying to get along, what do they implicitly agree to when they form a community or a communal board, right? What are they undertaking? So it's about shetvas, it's about shchinim, it's about kinyan, which is the sefer that it falls in the Rambam. It's about these issues more than these issues. So that's what Rav Isser Zalman is getting at here. So we're stepping out of Nezek land, and we're just walking into land of like quasi-contracts, you know, what's like the implied agreement between the members of the apartment building. Everybody see that difference? Now, I want to be very careful with this because this is going to be a very important discussion later on, and I was actually on my drive up here today. I never listen to anything in the car usually. Like, oh, I'm driving, I listen to something. So I saw, I like went into my car, I'm like, I don't have Ria. And I came across like Ben Arch is giving a shiur in Gruss on Hezekriya. And, you know, so he does this thing that the Chalapeno Chakira, is Hezekriya about Nezikin? You know, is it Baba Kama? Or is it about Shutfin, Shchenim, the law of neighbors? Now, there's a sense in which that's a legitimate chakira. When you think about it, we have to be very careful because, well, what's the relationship between Yazikin and Kinyan Shkenin? Okay? So, what's the relationship between Yazikin land and Kinyan land? Right? So, my view, at least right now, is that they're mirror images of each other in the sense that Nezek is about protecting the rights of your property that you have. Right? So, obviously there's a sense in which Chiyuve and Nezikin flow from Hilchos Kinyanim, right? The law recognizes a sphere of legal protection that you have. And then torts, Nezikin, is just the way that it enforces the protection of your property. Right? I mean, that's kind of obvious. Yes? So I don't think it's so easy to say, oh, is Hezek Rehiya about Nezikin, Baba Kama, or is it about Shchinin, about like the laws of neighbors, like zoning laws? Okay, so we have to be very careful with this Hakira. In this context that we're using it right now, I think we could formulate this in two ways. We want to think more about the relationship of these two formulations. When we talk about Hezek Ria holding people accountable who are not the Mazik, so we could just formulate that in terms of, well, because we don't want anybody to suffer a Nezek loss. That's sort of not the way of formulating it right now. Or is it because this is like an implied agreement between the partners? Okay. The difference between these formulations and our usage of this is basically saying it's a right given to you by halacha, and then the halacha imposes the costs on the other members of the chatzer to protect this right. This formulation implies that, oh, when the halacha peers into the minds of people jointly using a chatzer, it kind of just knows that they had in mind to protect themselves from the hezekiah of the rabbin. Okay, so I want to use this distinction right now in that limited sense and reserve judgment for later on, like in 2 weeks, when we talk about this hakira about whether hezekiah is a nezikin halacha or a shkenin halacha. Because my view later on is going to be that this is very hard to sustain a real difference between what's in the Zikin halacha and what's a Shchein and Kenyan halacha. Okay? Let's take some hands, starting with Zolti.
I'm just curious, because this is all kind of like dependent on the kind of Gemara that I want to see, but is there like a specific definition to this Shokhus that is key to having multiple Shcheinim opposed to sending one?
I think it could be either or.
So then, would there be a, like a difference between having a Shokhus?
Arguably not. Arguably not. Because you could still say, in both, this gets to the, as you said, this gets to the Gemara's Maskana, when the halacha doesn't want you to suffer the loss, well, it's only the magnitude of loss suffered by multiple peering eyes, like derabin. And likewise, you could say, when we peer into the minds of the founders of the condo, right, when they created the thing, they were only thinking about protecting themselves from the magnitude of Hezekiah Derabin. Right, so I think either way you go, you could still draw a distinction between Derabin and Diyakin. Right. Right, Ben Narsh in his shir, I was kind of like, I was pulling into the parking lot when he was getting to this part, so he said something I didn't like. He seemed to like conflate Shchinim with like actual neighbors, like contiguous neighbors. And I think that's obviously wrong. Like, Shchinim doesn't require, like, abutting properties. Shchinim means, like laws of the neighborhood. Right? That's a different point than what you're making. But we'll talk more about that. Yeah?
Can you suggest that, like, something entirely different here is going on to, like, require abutting the wall? I was thinking maybe, could it be, like, a din in, like, sneas in the sense that having all of the Rabbim looking to the Chatzer is something that's like so antithetical to Tznius that like we can force everybody to vote up the wall in terms of privacy, not so that they can like do better, like, you know, do more.
Not to maximize their use of the
right,
Chatzer.
But it's simply so not Tznius that like the entire town looking at you like in your backyard that you can force everyone that's part of the Chatzer to like vote that up.
Okay, the problem with that is, I hear the suggestion. The problem is that it doesn't solve the inter-chatzer tznius issues, right? Because like you're only protecting from the outside.
Right. We have to say that like that when it says like hezekah derab and shiny, then this is like not really like hezekriya.
Right. So what I'm saying, like, what's the conception of tznius? I think you mean like dressing a certain way, or like, so the idea is the halacha only cares about what the people on the highway see, but not what the neighbors within the courtyard see with of each other.
Oh, I guess I was just thinking if it's like 1,000 people looking, it's just like a lot less sneeze, like to get in front of like 1,000 people.
Right, but I think that cuts both ways. You hear what I'm saying? It's not obvious that like as a moral issue of like modesty, that it's that's only affected by the Rabbim and not by the B'nai HaKatzer. So, but that's definitely an issue that's going to come up in. We'll see the Kilas Yaakov has a suggestion along those lines, and we try to nail down what is Hezekriah. Yeah. Romy and then Shmuel.
When you, like in this first option, it's not Hezekriah specific. Like, it's not focused off on Hezekriah. Like, that approach can say that Nezek is saying about Nezek in general, right?
This one. Correct.
And it has nothing to do with this specific case of Hezekriah. It's just saying in general, is he, we care about the
Nisa
victim rather than.
Sure, it's an open. My point is, we don't have the kalim here to address that Bavakama question, right? Because we're not looking at all those sigyas. But in a limited application of Hezekriah, Rav Nachum saying the question under review on Daf Beis and Gimel Babasra is about the Nisa. So like, we don't know what Nezikin in general is about, but we do know that Hezekriah is about protecting the Nizak's rights, not about prosecuting Mazike Ria offenders. That's which is an important distinction. You might say, oh, Hezekriah is a window into Nezikin in general. That's like a big stretch, right? Good, Romy?
Yep.
Shmuel.
When you talk about the Samaritan range between Shkenim and Nezikin,
yeah, how like one is just like protecting the rights of the other.
Right. I think that works really nicely when you view it retroactively. I mean, so us as neighbors got damaged.
You know it's right when everyone who talks about it, like you're a very powerful hero. It's like you can't describe it beyond using like very broad abstractions. So, like, oh, is this a Bava Kama halacha or is this a Shkenim halacha? But then when you try to like probe deeper between like what do you mean by both Kama Halacha and like what do you mean by Shkenim Halacha, I think it collapses.
I think it works really nicely retroactively. You said, okay, we got damaged, how are we like going to divvy up this cost? I think that mirror image, that sort of parallel, works really nicely. Proactively though, which this case seems to be proactive, okay, let's avoid damages, it seems less intuitive to me that there is sort of a parallel imaging.
You think so? Let's see. You're saying we don't take ex ante precautions to protect property?
Not sure.
Like we don't set up precautions in advance to protect property?
Or it's not obvious to me that saying that for Shkenim and Nezikin are
reflections of each other. Let's think more about that. But you could think of a law that says all tenants have to have renter's insurance on the house that they live in because, like, you know, it's we don't want them to suffer losses when their house burns down or something. Like, so it's like an advanced way of taking precautions to make sure that there's no property loss after. But hold off on that discussion for later. Benji, you have a hand on this?
Yeah. What happens, like, just in general in halacha with an unfulfilled contract? Like, two people have a contract, you know, I'll, like, plow your field if you, like, fix my plumbing.
Right.
And then the guy, like, later decides, oh, I want to plow your field.
Right. So it depends. Employment contract or... Employment contract's tricky But this is like a non-employment. It's like a shitfuss contract. So you force one party to perform or pay damages.
You could force them to...
perform or pay damages.
But meaning even though nothing... like, it's not like one side of the contract has been fulfilled.
Well, here you have B'nai HaChatzer. They're all obligated to chip
in. In this case, like, half the contract has been fulfilled.
Right. I mean, other people are paying.
Right.
You're saying what happens if one side's not performing and like I'm waiting on you, you're waiting on me?
I guess the way I'm thinking about the shufu is that like you enter into this like this broad implied contract, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know, you live in a society, everyone else is conforming to the codes, so therefore you have to uphold your
share.
Is that viewed as like nezek? Am I damaging you? Or is that
it's a good question. Like, yeah, good. Yeah, it's a good question. I want to hold off on it. We'll talk more about shanim. I think we'll take up that type of question when we look at shanim more generally. Like, what types of mutual obligations are they? Okay. Now, let's turn to the Gemara's Maskana. Everybody with me so far? Yeah? Okay. Let's look at the Gemara's Maskana. So, the Gemara says, you can't prove anything from the obligation to protect the chatzer from the eyes of the Bnei Rishis HaRabim. The Gemara said, because Hazeka de Rabim shiny. Okay. So, what's that maskana? So, you can't prove Hezek Rishmei Hezek because Hazeka de Rabim shiny. So, Rashi says, Hazeka de Rabim. What does Rashi say? Shekol Bnei Rishis HaRabim Mestaklan Sham. What do you think Rashi's saying? Ariel?
Maybe there's two different types of hezek ra'iya, and there's a more general type, which is accepted that everybody should be able to have, which is that you can have a people from Rishis HaRabim looking in, whereas between two people within a chatzer, where it's kind of already agreed upon that they live together, it's not as mubam me'la that they're going to have to go ahead and have divided there, and therefore by Rishis HaRabim it's agreed upon, and
So what's the difference there between the between hezek ra'iya and hezek ra'iya?
Hezekiah Yachid isn't implied in the same way that Hezekiah Rabin is implied on an accepted level.
Okay. Why? What would be the reason to distinguish?
Because there's already, if you're sharing a chutzpah, it's already assumed that you're going to have some sort of lack of privacy between the two of you, whereas to have people who can push
Rabin. Maybe, but what do you take from Rashi's language? All Rashi tells us is Hezekiah Rabin, Shekol B'nei Rishis HaRabim, Mistaklan Sham. So what do you think Rashi is trying to emphasize there? And why is that different from Hezek HaDi Yachid?
Because you're not necessarily... I think it's assumed already maybe that there's going to be... meaning if we're going to take it as a given...
But just look at Rashi. I understand what you're saying. Just, what do you think? Unless you think Rashi's saying that...
I think that Rashi's saying it's a given that you're always going to have some water on the chatzer of people living there.
Why? Why is that a given but not Hezek HaDi Yachid?
Because you should be protected from human Rishis HaRabim.
What are the key words in... keyword, words. Well, I assume every hezek ra'iya requires being mistakel. Okay. Of the shekol b'nei Rishis HaRabim, what are the favorite word?
Shekol.
Why shekol?
It's literally like it's public.
Well, it's very universal, right? Mm-hmm. Ned, what are you going to say?
I don't know if Rashi would be familiar with this distinction, but I know that Allah recognizes the distinction between Yistaklut and Yistam Ria.
Okay.
So it could be that this implies a more intense form of gazing.
Okay, it's interesting. So this is like Mistakel. So you think Listakel is different than Roe? In which way? Like it's...
Yistaklut is more extreme.
Okay. So more extreme and shekol, so it's more universal, right? So what's the difference in Yachid and Rabim, according to Rashi? Zolti?
One person peeping in, is that more peeping in?
Yeah, it seems like a difference in magnitude, a difference in number, quantity, right? Are we all on board for that? Ariel, doesn't that seem to be like the easiest way to read Rashi?
Yeah.
He's just saying, like, look,
yeah.
One guy, a million people.
I think it's more...
your words, not Rashi's. Rashi just says, Shkolinirah Misak Misham, right? To my mind, that suggests a difference in magnitude, right? Chari, you agree? Right? That's all Rashi tells us.
What we should infer from the difference in magnitude, I think is an interesting question, but I think from Rashi, it just sounds like a numbers game. Zolti, you don't like that?
Yeah. Sorry, isn't that obvious? Rashi versus Yachid is an issue of magnitude. That's not adding anything.
Never come across a Rashi where he just tells you like the obvious?
I think Ariel is kind of implying like that it's kind of like because it's an order of magnitude that everyone's peeping in, then therefore it seems to be saying that like you're kind of creating, like you're kind of making your own property more public, very public. If you have one person, like gives one individual to be able to see you, you still kind of, quote unquote, still like kind of in, like have a level of privacy, but have everyone looking at you, being able to look into you, that like totally makes your whole property very public.
That's a really interesting point. So I think you're trying to explain the legal significance of the difference in magnitude, right? And you're saying, well, one of them like undermines private property, and the other one is like private property with a headache, something like that, right? Okay, it's a really good point. I'm going to come back to it in a second. Marina Gershom, Hezek Adorab Mashaini, Aval Hechad Ika Hezek Riyad Yachid, Lab Shmei Hezek. So just again, same the obvious. If it's just the hezek riya of one person, then it's lav shmei hezek. If it's the aggregate hezek riya of many persons, then it's shmei hezek. Difference in magnitude. Zolti is trying to flesh out for us, well, what's the significance of the difference in magnitude? So Zolti, your point is?
What status therefore is your what status is your privacy? It's totally like, do you completely lose your whole like level of privacy? Or
yeah.
Is it still just, like you said, like a headache?
Right. So this is an interesting point, and I'm actually on the fence. I'm struggling like how to make sense of the distinction. Because I think there's an argument to go the other way. Well, it depends how exactly you put your point, which is there's almost like a certain anonymity to Hezeka Dirabim, where like, if it's just like the people on the street who see what you're doing, it's like, who cares about them, right? But if like the neighbor who you see every day like knows what you're doing, that's like more intrusive. Now, somebody hear that argument? It's like, you know, so who cares if like the highway, so in a certain sense, right? If you're thinking of it in terms of like privacy, like, I don't care if, like, the people on the 59th Street Bridge could see into my apartment. Like random commuters from Queens. Like, who cares? But, like, if the guy who I have to say good morning to every morning when I get my coffee could, like, see my private activities, then, like, I don't know. That's really a lack of privacy. No?
I mean, like, I feel like in one case, you're being put on display, essentially. Like, I don't want to see. I feel like that could be very, that could be a big nuisance, where it's just, like, one person.
Yeah, well, I liked your formulation about one of them, like, there's still an element of private property, right? It's just, it's like a shared private property amongst a few people. And you might even say, well, there's a way to solve the privacy issue through private agreement, right? Like, we come to equilibrium where I use it in the morning, use it in the afternoon, but there's no way to control the robin. Right, so you can say this in two ways. One is, well, the important point here is that is this essentially private? The answer is, if the robin could see in, it's not private at all. If just your neighbor could see in, it's still private with a nuisance. That's one way of drawing the distinction. The other way of saying it is like, say, when you think of collective action problems, so halacha wants you to have private use of your property. The rabbim is a mess for a collective action problem. No one can negotiate with the rabbim, right? They come, they wreak havoc, no one's accountable, so there's a coordination problem. within the 5-6 members of the chatzer, that's surmountable by, you figure it out amongst yourselves. Right, so that's like a way of explaining why the yachid wouldn't matter. Fair? So I think that's one way of making sense of this distinction. I think that's what you're getting at, right? Yeah.
I think it might make more sense, like, mitzvah, like, what you're willing to do. Like, you'd go out, like, shirtless to check the weather if, like, just your neighbor is going to see you, but not, like, the entire highway is going to see you shirtless, probably.
Right, well, I was thinking that story depends, right? Like, it depends on...
It was about, like, using the property.
What were the psychology of, like, whose peering eyes bother you, right? So maybe, like, the robin don't bother you if you don't know them. Unless, like, there's always the risk of, like, the person, like, you know, you care, but... you hear what I'm saying? Yeah, I think it cuts both ways. Romy, and then Shmuel, you got your hand up, or okay, Romy.
It also depends where you live. Like, if we're talking about living in like a town, like a shtetl, and you know everybody, then
right, then Robin matters, right? Right.
If so you're living in the city, then right.
Right. So Manhattan, you're saying Manhattan is like a period between Atzma.
Right?
The Gemara is not talking. The Gemara thinks of the Robin. It's not thinking of that Robin.
Right.
So you're saying it's like the Robin here, and like, right? What do they call this slab of concrete? What? The plaza, right? So it's like the plaza. That's the robin, right? So it's like, if you're going out shirtless, then like, or Tversky's going to see you.
Actually, a good example is like when you're in morgue and everyone from the library can see into morgue.
Right, right. That's the hezek of the robin. Whereas like when you're walking from your dorm room to the shower, maybe
the
that's like a different.
Might go the other direction.
What?
The hezek of the robin might go onto the people in the library. They don't want to see that.
They don't want to see that.
I honestly thought that might have been what Rashi was talking about. So like that, like you might have thought the Zeke the Robin means that you need to protect it because like the Robin should not have to see what's going on in your house.
Oh, that's interesting. Zeke the Robin.
He's playing for Mashal. No, it's the Robin being the Mazik.
That's very nice. Very sharp reading of Rashi. You hear what?
Have you seen? I mean, go to the library. That's just a special question. We'll see what they do in the house.
Ah, so you're saying Zeke the Robin changed Kovner Robin should stop and Sham. Like to protect the robin. That's how you're.
Maybe, I don't know. So maybe that's Rashi. I thought that might be what Rashi is coming against, but that's why it's not obvious.
What do you guys think of Zachariah's reading?
Too creative.
Too creative? Fits with the words.
Like, Hezek the robin is the biggest. Is it the Nezek caused by the robin, or the Hezek done unto the robin?
Right, the problem is there's too much of a shift into Havin and Maskana.
Right.
Right? On your reading. Like, then we're saying, Shkolbanei Rabin, so we have to, like, protect the robin. Arguably, yeah, but if you think that persists, like that type of reasoning also for Hezek the Rabim, maybe.
Well, maybe it's like primarily the Shmir Seinayim Malacha. Like it's really on the road.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I think it's a very cool suggestion. A little too radical for a Sunday morning.
But then why would it just be the Rabim? Wouldn't it be Yathek also?
Right, what, the tourism protect Yechidim? Right?
Maybe
right. No, I think we have to step away from this reading right now.
But
I do want to say, I think it's what Benji was getting at. So what's the part of Maskana, right? So Hezek Adorab Mishaini, and Josh, remember you had a comment on Maskana. So Hezek Adorab Mishaini. So one way of reading this is difference in quantity, right? So a few eyes is not Hezekriya, many eyes is Hezekriya. A slightly different way of putting this is modified use of your property. You know, you're not able to use it during the 1 hour a day that your friend, your neighbor is sunbathing. Okay, that's not Hezekriya. But, you know, the fact that you'll never get any use out of it now because the robin is always there, that is Hezekriya. But there are different ways of formulating. Whether you're thinking of it in terms of use limitations or just like the number of people looking at you. That reading should be amenable to anybody who wants to say that even the man de Amar lav Shmei Hezek concedes Shmei Hezek when the numbers are in his favor. Right? When there's a lot of people, everyone's going to agree Shmei Hezek. So if you read Rashi as saying that, then at least in the case of Beishar, Kovim B'nei HaChatzer, there's no view out there that denies Hezek Riyashmei Hezek when the Hezek is extreme. Do you see that?
Just getting back to our original question. Is there another way to read this Maskama? Is there another way to read this?
So I'm thinking, maybe. What do you think? So take a step away from Rashi for a second, because Rashi's formulation might just go to the Gemara's formulation. Hezeka deravim shiny. If you just have that,
do you have to read the Gemara as conceding that everybody acknowledges Hezek and Rishmei Hezek?
Well, it's like the same formulation as the Gina, like where we said it was like a different din with the iron heart. You can say it's a different din.
So what's the different din?
I don't want to suggest Sneas. So I don't know. I can't
okay, but how would you say the different din is embodied by these three words? Hezeka deravim shiny. So I was thinking, the Gemara's answer here might be along the lines of the question that the Achronim were bothered by, which is, this is not a Mazik-Nizak relationship at all, right? So the Gemara's point is, Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, look, we forced the Bnei HaFatzer to chip in to block Hezek Riyah, so clearly Shmei Hezek. The Gemara's answer is like, Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, it's a totally different issue. We're talking about a third party. We're talking about imposing costs on your neighbor to protect the hezek from a third party. That doesn't depend on hezek riyah shmei hezek or lash shmei hezek. That's about, as Benji said, what are the implied terms of the shitfus? Like when the condo board gets together, they intend to create private property. Right? So in the same way that they want a pool, they want privacy from the rabbi. So putting Rashi aside, I think Rashi's language connotes it's just a difference in numbers that will demarcate Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek from Lav Shmei Hezek. I think if you just have the Gemara, Hezek Adarav Mishaini means that the common interest of the Bnei HaChatzer to volitionally protect themselves from the peering in of a third party, that's not Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek issue, right? That's just like, what are the Bnei HaChatzer willing to agree to? No, I think it's really straightforward. So it's like exactly the thing that bothered the Achronim, and how could the Gemara even think this is about Hezek Riyah? Because it's the Rabin's Nezek, right, which the Rabin's not paying for. That itself explains the Gemara's answer of saying if they get their own shiny, like it's not a Mazik Nizak relationship. Yeah. We just gotta find a reason who says that. It's kind of an obvious way to read the Gemara.
Is there a reason to distinguish between Shmuel and the Rabbanan? It seems to be that the Rabbanan doesn't assume that they both
Yeah, within that Mishnah you're saying.
So you could also read it as saying maybe our Gemara is in relation to the Rabbanan, and that's entirely
That's interesting. I think that's a really good reading. So Ned's suggesting the Havamina here is like the Ramban, that this is Hezek Riyah. And then the Gemara is saying, nope, it's a mistake to read this as Hezekah Deriyah Derabim. It's actually just Hezekah Derabim, as in, like, the Rabim trample and will violate the private property by trespassing and something like that. That's really good. Other way of reading the Gemara. See that? Like, Hezeka de Rabim is not meant to contrast Rabim with Yachid. Hezeka, it's just talking about like the damage caused by when you have like a public thoroughfare that goes right by your house, right? So everyone's got to pay to keep the Rabim away, not to block their peering in.
The next two words of the Gemara don't really help by reading them, which are with the Yachid level, as in an interest.
Okay, so I'll have to see about the Diyachid Lo when we get to that. That's a fair point, though. Over here, you're saying.
Yeah.
Using
Rabin in context of Diyachid, not
Rabin. Well, it could be the Gemara saying, well, why don't you have a similar concern about Hezeka Diyachid? But I think that's a fair point. I want to think about that. Ned, do you hear his response?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's stop here, right? It's already... what time is it?